Yeah, to, you know, that's to bring us back to our core. It's like, I mean, something in the desert experience, it's like facing death or something, I guess. Yeah, I mean, that's it's so interesting that you do that, though, within nature, you know, that you let nature help people and speak to people. And yeah, and so, because, of course, one can think of, you know, dialogue, but dialogue is hard. You know, dialogue can just go on and on and on and on and never find resolution and just make people actually more bitter and entrenched at the end, you know, because they feel so tired and feel like maybe they haven't moved at all. But this is, let God do the work out in the desert. That's great. So this is lovely. What a beautiful group. These are the seeds of the future, all this. Yeah. It's great. What I thought I would read, we can pass around and read this passage of Abraham in the desert, because that's also highlighted in the Quran, and where Abraham, alayhi salam, sees the star and the moon and the sun, and that is interesting. And then we'll talk a little bit about, I open to the enlightenment of Prophet Moses. This is our teacher and guide called Lex Hickson, and he was given the name Noor, Divine Light, by our first teacher who came. It was he's master of love, he called himself master of the heart. And he gave him the name Noor. And Noor was immediately... He was inspired to you can't call it translate, because he didn't really know Arabic literally, but he received it through the heart. So this is one form of knowledge that is recognized and prized, actually, in the Sufi tradition, is, of course, the inner knowledge. So it's not just the study of books and acquiring knowledge. It's really the revelation from within. So this is how he worked. And he came with an amazing text called Heart of the Quran, in which, if you compare, it's so interesting, if you compare it to the Quran, when you read it by itself, this can't be the Quran. You know, this is too beautiful, too amazing. And then if you compare the verses he chose and expanded upon, and the verse of Christ, it's there, it's true, it's that. So what we feel we need are translators, not literal translators, but translators of the tradition, because each person's sacred tradition is really such a core for them. But sometimes those sacred traditions get narrowed down and hardened. And then, then we become hard, because if that's our core, then we become hard too. We become narrow. We feel we can't step out of our boundaries. And so the translation of the more essential principles of each tradition is utterly necessary, so that each tradition can be seen in its universality and its all-embracing human principles, human beauty. So, because each one was given by God for human beings. So, this is, the book, as I said, I'd like to read from. But also what I'd like to talk about is that we are on the verge of Rejab, the month of Rejab. Rejab is the month said to be... So we'll pass it around. Everyone read a paragraph. From the beginning. We're between two bars, which is a perfect Sufi metaphor, but sometimes it gets very loud. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. My servant and messenger Abraham confronted his kinsmen. You are elevating elemental forces to the rank of angelic beings, invoking these forces through ritual objects, and worshipping them to obtain power. I can see clearly that your lives and the lives of our people are being severely distorted by such practices. The source of wisdom who is now speaking placed from before eternity this penetrating spiritual understanding in the soul of my beloved Abraham, so that he would be a leader for all those who turn with perfect clarity toward Allah alone.
The highest truth, that the ever-present source alone truly exists, was shown to the prophet Abraham in this way. While he was immersed in solitary contemplation within the vastness of the evening sky, the first star suddenly appeared. To the pure vision of the prophet, the star's light revealed the entire universe as the luminous manifestation of Allah's majesty. While my intimate friend Abraham meditated on the bright mirror of my creation, the evening star moved across the sky and disappeared behind the mountain. Perceiving this as clear teaching from the source of wisdom, he reflected, Allah's majesty cannot be loved as totally as one loves his essence.
Then the full moon rose. Ascending further in contemplation, Abraham exclaimed, Behold a mystic symbol for the transcendental beauty of Allah. But his meditation on divine beauty also came to an end as the moon disappeared behind the mountain. Recognizing once more a teaching from the source of wisdom, he prayed intensely, Most precious Allah, please guide me beyond your majesty and beyond your beauty, or I will remain among those who do not awaken to the highest truth.
Having supplicated the Supreme Source for guidance the whole night through, my intimate friend witnessed the magnificent desert sunrise. Perceiving the sun's vast radiance as a teaching from the source of wisdom, he declared, Behold a mystic symbol for the power of Allah. All day long, he remained plunged in contemplation of Allah Most High as transcendent power. But when the fiery sun finally set, his adoration of the divine attributes disappeared, and he awakened mystically into the divine essence alone.
After returning from the wilderness to his people, the prophet Abraham proclaimed, I have always been free from religious practices that exalt forces of nature. But now I have been brought face to face with the essence of Allah, the only reality, who alone radiates the broad expanse of earth and heaven. I have lost myself and found my prophethood in the truth that Allah alone exists.
Alhamdulillah. I think that's it, but let's see. That's when he goes back. I just want to really read the part on his experience in the desert. What comes, isn't that afterwards where he goes back to his people? Yeah, that's right. Well, why not? Let's have the whole thing.
Threatening him with the wrath of the various etheric forces which they worship. Displaying the utter calm of illumination, Abraham replied, Do you imagine that any threat or argument can turn me away from the ultimate source when I am experiencing direct guidance from the source itself? I fear no powers in the universe, for I have always turned towards the source of power. Have you forgotten that the encompassing awareness of Allah manifests and harmonizes the entire creation? How could I fear the hatred of any being when I am receiving constant inner assurance from the source of love? You are the ones who should be apprehensive, my people, having elevated your own limited concepts and experiences to the level of divinity. They can offer you no ultimate support or refuge. Consider carefully which of us is receiving true protection. Only those who turn solely toward the source of love and do not obscure their being by the slightest negation of love are perfectly guided. There's one more paragraph.
Mm-hmm. That's one more paragraph. Good.
Mm-hmm. My beloved Muhammad, such was the illumined insight that the source of wisdom transmitted through the prophet Abraham for the instruction of all humanity. The ever-present source alone draws hearts and minds to higher and higher levels of vision and understanding. Allah Most High is encompassing awareness and completeness.
Alhamdulillah. Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you. I feel that's kind of a, you know, like a sign for your work in the desert or in creation, or and that when we come to our deeper self or the truth in ourself, then, you know, how can we continue fighting over idols, which is, you know, whatever we carry that is excess, that is not the truth. And of course, there are things to deep things to work out. But really, when we face God, all that it melts away. It melts away because who are we? First of all, we're nothing. That's what comes up. We're listening to a poem of Khayyam, and who said, "Well, since you know, very soon you'll be nothing. Why not be nothing now?" You know, this is a great Sufi mystic. But, you know, many mystics say that's our essential nature, in the sense that our life is a borrowed existence from God. And another way of saying is that we're servants, we're slaves. And so really, when we see ourselves as such and in front of the magnitude of God that we might encounter in nature, particularly by ourselves, then, you know, it's very hard to continue carrying things that that might not be true. Not to say that there are not wounds. Wounds are there. But wounds are there to be healed. This is something that becomes, I guess, as you get older, you see that experience in others, that how beneficial a wound can be, or a sickness, or all of these things that we think of as just burdens that we don't want, but they're ways to a deeper truth. So, anyway, you know, I feel very strong about what you're doing. We're just on the cusp of the month of Allah. It's called Rajab. They're the 2 months preceding Ramadan, which is the month of the fast and the kind of plunge into the ocean of God. And Rajab, Shaban, Ramadan. So Rajab is said to be the month of Allah. And it's very interesting what the month of Allah is. You know, what does it mean? Something like that, almost like Abraham's experience, that it's a month in which God is more unveiled and steps in front of the curtain of creation. And just really like Abraham's experience. So not by chance that we read that tonight. And, you know, our teacher, Sheikh Musafir, this wonderful man who came from Turkey, lover of God and lover of humanity, both. And he said, you can never thank your mother enough for one kick that you gave in the womb. You can never thank her enough. So, you know, it came to me today, well, what about Allah, who not only gave us physical life, but gave us existence? You know, we can never, no matter how grateful we are, no matter how much worship we make, and, you know, and God forbid that we ever be satisfied with ourselves or think that, oh, well, you know, our worship is good now, and, you know, we're doing things according to the book, and God should be pleased with us. You know, that's, for a Sufi, that's like a curse to think that way. Because we don't want to depend on anything we do. And we just look to the divine mercy and the divine generosity. That's where really our gaze is fixed, and see all coming from there, that everything we do will never match the slightest gift of God to us. So in a way, it's, you know, it's bewildering to see that. And yet, it, in a way, it's also liberating. It's liberating to really know that from God alone comes all good, all good. And that may we just be aware. So our part is to have that gratitude and awareness and remembrance of God, that we say that we're always aware of God. And when we're aware of God, we can't help but be in zikr, what is called zikr, which is that almost like, well, it's called praise or remembrance. And it's a, like a, you know, you might say like an exaltation of our being. So it's, zikr is when we're completely awake, and our bodies are awake, our minds are awake, our heart is awake. And when we're awake, we're really in praise. So inshallah, in this month of Rajab, we will enter that state of mystery, that flight into the unknown, which is really the travel in God. We don't know, you know. We don't know what will come. And to remove from us our sense of habit and, you know, convention and what expectations and everything that, you know, we kind of, which are sort of like the limits around our life. And when, just to remove these and be completely open, naked before God, as in our morning, we are, oh Allah, may I stand naked before your divinity. So may we enter the Rajab with that intention, and may that be granted to us, to, that we fill ourselves with God and empty ourselves of ourselves, and fill ourselves with God and with God's intention for us, and rather than forging our own, inshallah. Would anyone like to ask a question? Would you like to ask a question?
I wonder if in your sort of searchings and readings, do you find that you hear similar messages from different traditions and faiths?
From the mystics. You see it in the texts. All the texts of Revelation are absolutely extraordinary. But, and you see it... the mystics of all tradition are very, very similar. Very, very similar. Mm-hmm. So, yes, that's where I encounter it most. I mean, anyway, they are usually the ones to give expression to the beauty of their tradition or their revelation, or, you know. So, yes, I think what's forming today is a body, a mystical body of mystics from the various traditions. And which will be very different, you know, because it's really in the spirit and in the holy fire of the heart and in the light of revelation, and that's how life can be conducted, and rather than you know, it's really people who live in God and who want to live in God. So if they genuinely live in God, there's going to be, you know, harmony. And, you know, they might disagree on certain little points or something, but that's not so important, because they will not argue about it, usually. And they just sit down at the banquet table and feast together and share, you know, the knowledge and wisdom that has been given to them, and recount God's favors to them, and, you know, both in their personal lives. It doesn't have to be in a, like an outer tradition. It can be very much in their personal lives, and many of these people come also from, you know, outside, in a way, of religious traditions. I mean, you see today people in the healing field, but there's usually a field in which they grow, in which they're kind of planted. And so the healing field today is a very powerful one of healing and heart healing, body healing, mind healing, and they've kind of imbibed, you know, some of the best of the mystics. Often I find, and yeah, well, I mean, certainly the love. They realize that there's no healing without love. And that when you have love, you know, you're ready to give up. If you really love, you're ready to give up, you know, whatever. You're holding on to. You know, except for God. But then there's a certain point where just God holds on to you. And, you know, at first we hold on to God and we seek God and go after God. And then, you know, but of course, that's just in quotes. That's a way of saying that God is always the one reaching and drawing us further and further. But then there is a point where maybe it's, you know, mutual, where you feel really the divine pull. And, yeah, so, you know, in that, inshallah, and through love and beauty and joy, you know, this is how you can share just what you said of the congregation you visited together. I'm sure just they have that, if they have the joy. And everyone can participate in that. Everyone can participate in song and joy, you know, feasting together. Yeah. What about yourself? Have you found, you know, what would you say you've learned in your work in these years between, you know, Israelis and Palestinians, Jews and Muslims? And, or can you express it in words? Or?
I've learned a lot of patience.
Patience, oh boy, that's true. Our teacher, Effendi, you say patience is the key to knowledge. You have to have patience. Well, that's brilliant. Have you learned patience? You learned how important it is. Yeah.
I've learned, let go of the day-to-day drama sometimes.
Oh, that's right.
And try to take a longer-term look at it.
Yes, that's very wise. Yeah, right. Uh-huh. Yeah, not to get pulled in by that.
By the day.
Yeah, the emotion and the... Mm-hmm. Right, and to keep on with your kind of course. Uh-huh.
And we've talked a lot about the driving value of Outward Bound is compassion.
Compassion?
Compassion.
Mm, that's beautiful.
The founder of Outward Bound talks about, above all, compassion.
Mm.
And... being compassionate because I don't understand always the positions or decisions that others have to make who are far away and live in very different circumstances than I do.
Right.
Even when I think it hurts me, I have to learn to sort of get beyond that and be compassionate to the fact that I don't understand and just...
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So you brought in another principle, which is not knowing or taking,
right.
Which is one of Bernie's very strong principles of teaching. You know, and not knowing. But then the compassion comes from where, though, in yourself?
Maybe even compassion for myself in some ways, of not understanding and being okay with not.
That's interesting.
Uh-huh. That I'm not going to understand.
Right.
There's no possible way.
Right. Yeah, which is a great step if you give that up. It's true. If you feel you have to understand everything, you're not going to go very far. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's beautiful. So you should write a book soon.
I have written a book.
Oh, you have?
Not about this.
Oh, no? What's it on?
I spent many years doing human rights work, and it's about human rights issues. It's terrible. But it's about... I worked with ex-combatants in West Africa, but... What do you do with soldiers after wars like that, who sometimes have been soldiers since they were 12 or 13 years old?
Yeah.
They know no other life. They know no other way to get their needs met.
Right.
in, I worked with the UN for a long time on projects like that, and I wrote a book about experiences in different parts of the world.
That's amazing. Wow.
Rather depressing.
Depressing, yeah, I can imagine how depressing. But, well, congratulations. That you. So you seem, you don't shy away from the difficult. You seem to go there toward what is most challenging. You don't know why.
I don't know why.
Maybe as a place to exercise your compassion or your qualities, you know. Because it, you know, when we speak of the natural field, going into nature, that's one setting. But then to place ourselves also in human, you know, situations that will draw out from us, you know, our deeper qualities. Sometimes it's only in those situations that otherwise, if we're comfortable. So it seems that you have a gift for putting yourself in an uncomfortable situation. Yeah.
I love the fact that you describe it as a gift. I think my family would.
I'm sure. Oh, I'm sure. Now, let's talk about the benefits to your family. They're probably doing a lot of praying for you, hoping you'll survive. Or at least come back to your senses. That's really great. You know, we do what's natural to us and keep the beautiful. And that's one of the great things about Sufism, is that it, you know, it will take the really the beauty and the positive things of every tradition. And so you meet Sufism in West Africa, and it will have a very different flavor. It'll, you know, has the music and the qualities and the clothes, and then you come to, you know, Afghanistan, it'll look different. And wherever it goes, it's a kind of chameleon nature, in a sense. It has the basic fundamental la ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah, but that takes on all the colors. And that's part of the great spiritual freedom of Sufism. I mean, for myself, in fact, also coming from a Christian background, Catholic, but I had a need to find love, direct love, experience of love. That was the primary, I suppose, you know. And which was the same almost as finding God. You know, finding true love is like finding God. And then also the need for, you know, an open field. And I couldn't, like, you know, without dogma and things that, you know, you have to believe in a certain way. You know, you don't. I mean, the Sufis are all colors. All colors. Joseph Cloak.
Shea, I have a question, which is something that kind of was developing as you were speaking earlier about how, in kind of, as a Sufi, there's this idea that we are nothing, but that we are empty, like we're just in this body. And a lot of mystical traditions also talk about God as nothing, not in the sense it's like a bad thing, as we might associate it in our language, but just as kind of not anything that can be named.
Right.
And kind of like the ultimate by not being anything that we could understand.
Right.
And then also some faiths talk about God as being everything. I just wondered I don't feel like they're contradictory. But
no, you don't. No.
And I don't. But
good.
What the relationship is between this kind of idea of
right.
nothingness and everything, which actually, interestingly, mathematically is also very similar to each other. Like,
oh, really? In what sense? Explain a little bit.
Infinity are, in physics and mathematics, it's actually more similar than you would.
Ourselves think. You mean that
ourselves would think.
Right.
Or so science says. So
right,
I think it's
right.
interesting that that's also very different
yeah.
in faith.
Well, it's interesting that you bring in science, because I was just, you know, watched a program on the cosmos and the beginning of the universe, the Big Bang and all that. And, you know, and the scientist was trying to explain how, you know, it was just nothing. And it came out of nothing. He said that, you know, the universe was just, and he had to use mystical terms. Of course, at that level, it's so interesting, where I don't know if they, I'm sure they realized that. He said it was infinitely small, you know, the universe, infinitely small. And it came out of nothing, and then all of a sudden, you know, it exploded into this extraordinary creation. And they actually, it's amazing, because scientists, you know, more or less, I'm sure it's just the beginnings, tracing the formation of the universe in its early stages. And how at first it was just energy, and then it began to dance between energy and matter, and these what kind of matter, and then, you know, and I don't see from the point of view of, I like to call it Quranic vision. I don't like the word religious, I like the word Quranic. And from a Quranic viewpoint, that makes perfect sense, you know. But of course, what's not stated is who that nothing was, you know. And as you say, the there is a point, and I think this is in terms of what I've grasped, let's say, from my very really little, but, you know, insights into Sufi mystical thought, is which was, again, it's like science, it was inspired to the hearts. But as we say, this is science. There's something called Sufi science. And the Sufi science, though, is all the inspiration that comes in the heart. It's not necessarily, they did this too, the hour, then, you know, calculations. And as we know, scientists, in Arabic scientists and astronomers and all that. But what they have perceived is that there, you know, there's the unknown that we can never know. And I think that's what maybe when we refer to nothing, it's just that it cannot be known by us. And it is beyond, it is no thing in the sense of beyond any material and beyond any even perception. And Ibn Arabi says that very clearly. You know, he says there is something, a level that we know that we cannot know about God. And says then there's a level we don't even know about it enough to know that we do not know it. So this is, you know, and this, and he's very clear also, but about the other side, you know, that God is not just the transcendent. God is also everything, just as you say. And he says it's this constant, you know, balance between the two. It's both. And it says that this leaves the human in bewilderment, is the predicament, because our mind needs to focus on one or the other, you know. But when the two are there, it's like the paradox that kind of obliterates the mind. So it just, you know, you can be, you cannot grasp. And again, Quranic teaching says, and I'm sure Jewish teaching too, Jewish, you cannot grasp God, you cannot contain God, you cannot even conceive God. This is very much part of, I think, the Jewish mystical teaching. But then also, the other aspect is that God is always here. God is all of this altogether. Just not limit, because, and he said, otherwise we'd be limiting God. If we said God is just the transcendent, then we'd be limiting God. You know, God is unlimited, and you can't limit God. And so then God is the manifest. But if we just said God, well, just the manifest, then we'd be limiting God from that side. So it's really just living in that utter openness, which completely opens us, you know, when our mind is cannot settle on something in a way that allows the heart to be completely open. And just resting in the love of God, in the mercy of God, because that's what we are. We come from that, from God's love. And that's what everything comes from. So that is something that we can, you might say, hold on. If we can hold on to anything, we can hold on to that. And God's mercy and love. And, yeah, this is such a beautiful discussion to be having this on this night before Rejab. Yes?
I'm just thinking of Nisargadatta's words when he says, sometimes I feel I am everything. I call that love. Sometimes I feel I am nothing. I call that wisdom.
Wow.
And between love and wisdom, my life continues to flow.
Ooh, how beautiful. Wow. Did you hear that? Sometimes I feel I am everything, and I call that love. And sometimes I feel I am nothing, and I call that wisdom. Thank you. Alhamdulillah. All right, so with that beautiful introduction into God, we're always getting introduced and reintroduced to God. That's our life.